This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 17 was recorded on June 12th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us today. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast for systematic trading and investing. They're even offering Macro Voices listeners a free book. I'll tell you how to claim it at the end of this episode. Danielle, last week, the Fed had a great big powwow in Chicago. Top chefs were there between Powell and Clarida and all of the bigwigs of the Fed. Seems to me like they've changed their terminology slightly. And one of the things I've learned about the Fed is when they change just a few words, it usually has big meaning and it's all a big secret. Only the people who really follow the Fed know what the heck they mean. So what's going on here? What is with the change of language? What does it mean and what's coming next?
Well, first, the irony of the change in language given its source. In other words, the individual who's sanctioning it. Early on in 2012, transcripts, it was maybe one or two meetings in, Jay Powell said, you know, we really should communicate with the public such that it is understood by people who spend less than 50 hours a week following the Fed. So hence the irony that it came from Jay Powell in a speech that he made. You remember quantitative easing, they referred to it as large-scale asset purchases, LSAPs, because it's as long as it's meaningless, then it's good for the Fed. So several things came out of the speech that opened last week's Chicago Fed conference. On Tuesday morning, Powell took to the podium, and in his speech, he kept using the term effective lower bound, the ELB. The effective lower bound replaces the zero lower bound. Now, I cannot stress the importance of that, because if you replace a term, the zero lower bound, with the effective lower bound, that means you can breach the zero bound and veer into negative interest rate territory. We'll come back to that. Instead of quantitative easing or large-scale asset purchases, it has now been changed to the one nebulous term, level policy. Level. Level meaning the level of the balance sheet. Rising or falling, as in flows that make the level rise and fall. You could not come up with a more meaningless term for the general public, but there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, level. As far as forward guidance goes, and unconventional policy has been replaced. We now refer to unconventional policy as slope policy. The slope, as in how quickly the balance sheet is growing or not growing. Three very important terms. This was followed when Jay Powell gave his speech that ignited the markets that were desperate for a little Powell pirouette. We know that in the week of May the 31st, junk bond trading refroze. Neiman Marcus priced a bond at 97 cents on the dollar with a 14.9% coupon. Ladies and gentlemen, you're supposed to price bonds at 100 as in par. Opened in the secondary market the next day, trading at 86 cents on the dollar. That is, to put a technical term on it, no bueno. So junk bond issuance shut down. By the time the Fed conference rolled around the next morning, Bullard had come out and said, you know, we could see justification for a rate cut soon. Markets immediately began to price in June. Powell followed the next day with his I'll do whatever it takes rendition a la Mario Draghi in order to, quote unquote, sustain the economic expansion. And this was followed by the very first paper presented at this conference. One of the authors was from Harvard, but all you need to know is this. Bottom of page two, you can find this on the Chicago Fed website. Bottom of page two of this particular paper was the following statement. Had the Federal Reserve taken interest rates to the equivalent of negative 5% during the last crisis, the damage to the economy would have been mitigated. If you net out the one percentage point of synthesis easing that was represented by quantitative easing, now called level, then that means that you would have only had to have taken interest rates to negative 4%, obviously breaching the former zero lower bound, which has now been replaced by the effective lower bound. Is the Federal Reserve going to implement negative interest rates? I couldn't tell you that if you paid me money, but they have introduced the vernacular into their vocabulary that they hope we never figure out.
Danielle, you're scaring me with this, because when somebody on Powell's level introduces new terminology, as you say, it's not by accident. It's because they're setting the stage for something. It means that somebody knows what effective means. And it sounds like these people who are writing about -5 and -4%, if they're, you know, the first guys on the podium after Powell, it means they're in a position of power. Now, what scares the heck out of me, and I certainly know that people like Harvard professor Ken Rogoff understand this, because these are the guys that have been lobbying for outlawing cash for years. You can't go to negative 5% interest rates without risking cash hoarding that could create a run on the entire global fractional reserve banking system and a global financial crisis. So at least that's my perspective as an amateur at this Fed stuff. Please tell me there's more to it than this, and that there's nobody at the Fed who's stupid enough to think you can go to minus 5% interest rates without causing a cash hoarding crisis.
Well, I'll just say this. The number one selling household good in Tokyo after the Bank of Japan implemented negative interest rates was safes, as in safes to put in your home and put your yen inside of. So I hate to say it, but I think you're onto something there with your theory.
Well, I can't believe that the Fed isn't also aware of this. So in this paper, where people are talking -5 and -4%, percent, not basis points, right? We're talking 5% minus, like 500.
We're talking minus 5%, but remember, we started with 5.5 percentage points of federal funds ammunition going into the crisis. Today, we just have 2.5%, which means that theoretically, we won't go to negative 5%. We would go closer to -8%.
Well, I'm going to make the argument, despite not having 14 PhDs and working for the Fed, that you can't get anywhere close to minus 4% before cash hoarding is a huge problem, and you would have to institute some kind of new regulations to outlaw cash hoarding, or the entire fractional reserve banking system would be at risk. Please tell me that the Fed has acknowledged this risk, and people smarter than me have a reason to think that it's not going to be a problem. It's got to be in the paper, unless they're actually not thinking about it, and that would be unconscionable to my thinking.
Well, I think that there are certain individuals who would take issue with this, who also happen to have what we call money, lots of it. In other words, lobbying money. So if you're wondering who the adult in the room might be, this will be the first and last time in my career that I'm going to advocate for aggressive lobbying on the part of the U.S. banking system, such that they prevent this from happening by getting in politicians' faces and saying the Federal Reserve does not have the legal ability to take interest rates into negative territory. But as far as you getting me to step onto a patch of cow patty and say that a bunch of academics couldn't talk themselves into negative interest rates, I'm going to have to disagree with that. Even Powell, even though he's not a PhD, which is the shame of this whole exercise, is that he knows better. Shame on him to even be considering this and using this vernacular, throwing it around as if it's already gospel. So it's very, very disconcerting. But again, we have to hope that the deeper pockets of the U.S. banking lobby prevail on behalf of public pensions nationwide. This would absolutely be very, very, very problematic, not just for us, but for the entire global financial system.
Danielle, my mind instantly goes to what could happen in terms of cash hoarding and a run on the fractional reserve banking system if we had negative interest rates. But let's go broader than that. If we're talking about conscious and intentional negative interest rate policy, premeditated intentionally by central bankers, what else can go wrong in this story besides cash hoarding?
Well, if you take Ken Rogoff's thesis to its ultimate end, A, he will tell you that we will do a better job at implementing negative interest rates. We'll have a stronger propaganda policy. We will better sell and better educate households on the virtues of negative interest rates. And in case they don't get the message, then there will be a penalty imposed for holding hard cash. So if you have that $100 bill in your safe, in your home, it's only going to buy $95 worth of goods because there'll be a haircut imposed on any physical cash that is held. So again, these are the things that make me envision people with pitchforks in the street, and rightly so. This is the United States of America. And, you know, weapons of mass confiscation, as my friend Peter Bukvar says, should not be deployed on the banking system at all.
How does this feed into the election year that we're coming into? It seems to me that every pensioner in the country, if they understood this, ought to be absolutely irate. Policymakers are alluding to getting to the situation where it's not as if there won't be that much return on pensioners' savings, but actually, in real terms, there would be a guaranteed loss every year in real terms on pensioners' savings. That ought to really infuriate a whole lot of baby boomers. To what extent do you think the political machine understands these issues and is able to translate them in terms of consequences for everyday Americans?
You know, I wish that there was a greater understanding. I mean, I think that there's the beginning of comprehension. I mean, for heaven's sake, you have a Democratic state Senate in New Jersey that is trying to talk the Democratic governor out of tax hikes, saying if you do much more to try and top off this broken pension, we're just going to lose everybody of means in the state. They're just all going to leave. We're not going to have a tax base from which to tax. So I think that there is a growing recognition of how dangerous negative interest rates would possibly be, but it would be very, very difficult to communicate to the masses.
Danielle, let's move on to how this is likely to play out, and particularly what our listeners should be watching and listening for in the news flow. We've got a Fed Open Market Committee meeting next Wednesday, which will have a press statement from Powell. What should we be looking for, and how might this play out in terms of what I'm thinking of is maybe the beginning of a campaign to set expectations that the zero bound is no longer the bound?
Well, I think that we should have our eyes open, first of all, to the projections that are released. They're not released at every Fed meeting, but they are released at the June meeting. The projections, according to the 17 members of the Federal Open Market Committee, as to where they think the economy is headed. If you're going to be setting the markets up for a rate cut as soon as the July meeting, then you're going to have to take down your GDP forecasts and take up your unemployment rate forecasts. So that would certainly be a way of hammering home to viewers, to investors, the fact that the Fed is looking at a rate cut, because they won't necessarily just use the justification of the trade war, but a rate cut would have to be preceded by true deterioration in the U.S. economy. If you take out the 75,000 in revisions, we actually had a net flat non-farm payroll report for the month of May. There's a certain amount of hard evidence in the economy that the Fed could use as cover to take its projections down. And I think the press conference in particular will be a forum for Powell to come out and begin to prepare the public for the possibility of a rate cut if conditions were to deteriorate sufficiently to justify such a move. Because the Fed tends to be procedural, wants to be procedural in its dealings with the public. So his press conference would be the perfect time to say we might be pulling the plug earlier than September on quantitative tightening, and we could be looking at a rate cut here in the next few months, just such that they're validating what the markets have already priced in. We have to keep in mind that going into the Chicago Fed conference that we started this discussion with, markets had begun to panic, and they had begun to start pricing in that June rate cut. But by the time Powell got off the podium, that was close to 50%. And now that we see 5-6 percentage points of gains later in the stock market, that June rate cut possibility has been priced out of the market. that's a huge relief for policymakers who want to communicate to the public prior to any rate cut what their intention is. So at least they've got the leeway, the grace of time to set up the markets for something potentially as early as July, and then they can take the cover of the trade war and say, if conditions deteriorate on the trade war front with China, then we may see fit to ensure economic stability to come in with, you know, some form of an insurance rate cut, even though we still see the economy as being on strong footing, blah, blah, blah. That's how we might see it play out.
Well, thanks, Danielle, for another fantastic interview. We look forward to having you back in a couple of weeks for another update.
Likewise. Take care.
Today's All-Stars episode was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com. If you want a different perspective on how to invest in today's markets without emotions and without predictions, go to TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro, where you can claim a free book about a highly dependable and consistent yet frequently overlooked investment strategy. Check them out. You'll be glad you did. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly research roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.